EML. What Simons and Chabris have revealed about us would be difficult to believe if they hadn't repeated the experiment so many times with similar results. Their video shows two teams of people dribbling and passing basketballs. One team is dressed in white shirts, the other in black. Test subjects viewing the video are instructed to count the number of times players in white shirts pass the ball as they move around on the court. That's it, nothing more. But while test subjects are concentrating and trying their best to keep an accurate count of the passes, a woman in a full-body gorilla suit walks into the middle of the scene, beats her chest, and then casually walks off. To be clear, it's not some brief subliminal flash of an image. The gorilla is on screen for a total of about 9 seconds. After researchers ask for pass counts, they ask test subjects if they happen to have noticed anything unusual or out of place during the video. Surprisingly, about half of the people who take this test don't see the gorilla. They fail to notice a hairy gorilla strolling around right in front of their eyes for 9 seconds. They are so focused on the ball that their brains fail to recognize and remember the gorilla, even though the ball they are intently tracking with their eyes passes directly in front of the gorilla. This is inattentional blindness, and it's a normal, useful feature of our brains. We can't pay attention to everything all the time, so our brains zoom in on some things while sacrificing broader awareness. The implications ought to be obvious to aspiring skeptics. Not understanding inattentional blindness can lead us to be overconfident in our ability to take in everything around us and not let important things slip by. The truth is, however, we do miss important and unusual details, such as gorillas. We can't always be sure that we see everything we need to see in order to make sense of a scene or a situation before us. If someone observes what she thinks is a ghost, for example, the ghost sighting might hinge on key details in the scene being left out by her hyper-focused brain. For example, maybe the brain was so locked in on what she thought was a ghost that she failed to notice the lawn lights a few feet away that were shining on the bushes at an angle that formed a light image, similar to what popular culture has taught her a ghost is supposed to look like. Inattentional blindness is yet another reason to be skeptical of eyewitness accounts and to always ask for better evidence. Confirmation bias. Anyone who hopes to be a good skeptic has to understand confirmation bias and consciously resist it. You will never defeat it totally, but knowing it's there can prevent you from becoming a slave to it and turning your head into a haven for false beliefs. Confirmation bias is the problem we all have, even good skeptics, when it comes to thinking about our beliefs. Without being aware of it, we tend to protect our beliefs. Confirmation bias draws us toward evidence and arguments that support our beliefs while simultaneously turning us off to evidence and arguments that go against our beliefs. It might seem obvious that people gravitate toward the things they already agree with and like, the arguments they already agree with, but it's not obvious when it's happening to you. This bias makes believing in weird, unproven claims much easier than it would be otherwise. It can make recognizing that a belief is wrong and abandoning it extremely difficult. Someone who believes in psychics, for example, has a brain that will naturally perk up and go into overdrive when someone comes on TV to talk about the confirmed science of psychic readings. The stories and facts presented by the person on TV might be marked high priority by the brain and stored for future retrieval. But if a skeptic like me comes on TV and begins explaining how psychic readings really only seem to work and why it doesn't make sense to believe in them, the believer's brain is likely to instinctively go into siege mode. The drawbridge is raised, crocodiles are released into the moat, and defenders man the walls. Little or nothing the skeptic on TV says gets in. Anything that does somehow manage to penetrate is likely to be promptly forgotten, forever. The worst part of all this is that the believer usually doesn't recognize how biased and close-minded he is being. He likely feels that he is completely irrational and fair. It doesn't happen just with fans of psychics. We are all vulnerable to this distorted way of thinking. A good skeptic seeks to keep an open mind and knows that it is always wise to second-guess her conclusions and beliefs, no matter how sensible they seem or how beloved they may be. We have to do this both because we aren't perfect in our thinking and because things change. If you think you will never make a single mistake in your life, then by all means, never reconsider your conclusions. But if you are like the rest of us, then you want to constantly check yourself. Remember, nothing is static. New information and new discoveries often mean some things were an error and need revision or rejection. Nothing should be thought of as written in stone. Sure, some conclusions are very likely to be true for all time, but which ones? We can't possibly know for sure in every case. The best we can do is accept conclusions that are backed up by the best evidence we have today and agree to change our minds if better evidence ever comes along that says something different tomorrow. You never want to be too loyal to a claim. a belief or a conclusion about something. I think the claims of astrology are untrue, but I'm not chained to that position until my final breath. If the scientific process ever shows that Libras are the best lovers and Capricorns make better gardeners because of star and planet locations, then I'll adjust my view of astrology immediately. Changing your mind is okay. It shows wisdom and maturity. Never wavering from a belief no matter what is a mistake. What matters is trying to be as closely aligned with truth and reality as you can be at all times. And that requires many navigational adjustments over a lifetime. The Tale of Little Gretchen Greengums. The following short story is presented to help you remember some of the weird ways our brains can cause us to believe in things that aren't real. It's about a good girl who was not a good skeptic and suffered a most grisly fate as a result. Brain rot and a derailed life. Please remember this tragic tale whenever you find yourself on the brink of accepting an extraordinary claim that lacks overwhelming evidence. Maybe it's true, but do make the effort to think before you believe. Recall what happened to little Gretchen Greengums whenever you are tempted to believe in something unusual for no good reason. No doubt about it, young Gretchen Greengums was a winner. Hands down, she was the smartest and most popular kid in the tiny town of Rotbridge, population 7,495. Greengums was special, and everybody knew it. Cute as a button, too. Nobody cared that she had a wicked overbite and a frightening set of eyebrow ridges that might have looked a tad thick on a Neanderthal boxer. There was just something special about the girl, and the whole town loved her for it. Gretchen was so beloved and respected that no one bothered to oppose her when she ran for president of the fifth grade class. She was the rare overachiever no one resented. Many adults predicted that she was sharp enough and motivated enough to make it all the way to the top. More than a few openly talked about her having the potential to one day run the town's most prestigious and successful business, a factory that recycles used kitty litter to make dentures and decorative tobacco pipes. But Gretchen had even bigger plans than that. Her goal was to head off to college after high school and earn a degree in astronomy. She wasn't shy about telling anyone she was going to either prove or disprove string theory and crack the mysteries of both dark matter and dark energy once and for all. Nobody in town had the slightest clue what she was talking about, but they knew enough to respect her ambition and not to doubt her. Gretchen was no spaz. In addition to her lofty academic goals, she also dreamed of being the best baton twirler in the world. She already had won the annual Pro-Am Rotbridge Baton Twirling Championship 3 years straight. Everyone just knew she would go pro one day. All she needed was a little more seasoning, a bit more hide on her back throws, and she would be ready for the big leagues. Yep, she was the real deal, the total package, the golden child of Rotbridge. Gretchen Greengums was going places. But out of the blue, everything changed one strange autumn day. During a twirling practice session all by herself out on the YWCA field, Gretchen tossed her baton high in the air like she had done a million times before. But this time, while looking up, something odd caught her attention. Up in the sky, something was hovering in the air. It was strange. Definitely no plane, she thought. As the baton fell to earth beside her, she just kept staring up. Cripes, what in heck fire is that thing? Alternating jolts of fear, curiosity, and excitement surged through her little body as she began to figure out what it was. Wait, I know, it's a UFO, just like the one I saw in that show on the Pseudo-History Channel last week. Holy moly, it's even shaped kind of like one of the spaceships they showed. It must be aliens. What else could it be? Believing is seeing. We don't really see with our eyes, as most people assume we do. We see with our brains because our brains construct a scene based on images that come in through the eyes. It's never a perfect reflection of what's actually there in front of us. Furthermore, what the brain sees can be strongly influenced by what the brain already believes. Even if she wasn't completely convinced by it, Gretchen's recent viewing of a non-scientific TV show about UFOs may have primed her to see something that wasn't there. Gretchen analyzed the object carefully. Her mind raced. She placed her hands on top of her head and said out loud that this was the most important day of her life. No longer hovering, the object began moving away toward the distant horizon. It's gigantic, she said aloud to herself. Maybe 1,000 feet wide. No way is this a balloon or a blimp. It's gotta be a spaceship. Gotta be. She began to imagine what the occupants might look like. Questions flooded her mind. What is their planet like? How smart are they? Are they friendly? Will they share their knowledge with us? What if they're mean? What if they want to eat us or something like that? Our brains find meaningful patterns, even when none are there. When we look around at the world, our brains naturally search for patterns and try to connect the dots in visual noise or clutter to form whole images, even when the dots don't really connect and there is nothing actually there. In this case, Gretchen is looking at nothing more than a flock of birds in the distance, a likely cause of many UFO sightings. Without her being aware of it, Gretchen's brain instantly connected the dots and created one solid image out of several individual birds flying in formation. Furthermore, the late-day sun is reflecting off of the birds' bellies, making them appear unnaturally bright. She thinks it is so big because it's difficult, if not impossible, to accurately estimate the size of something in the sky, if you have no idea what that something is. Gretchen was no idiot. She remembered something her third-grade teacher once said to the class about being skeptical of UFO sightings. She blinked hard and slow twice, took a deep breath, and tried to look at the scene before her with fresh eyes. She clenched her teeth in total concentration and stared at the UFO with all the mental focus and intensity she could muster. But it was still there. "No," she said, "this really is real. I'm not imagining it, and there is no way that big thing is a plane or a helicopter or anything else like that. I can't figure out what it is. It has to be an alien spaceship. We don't see everything we look at. We can stare at a scene and believe that we are paying close attention to it, but still miss important things going on right in front of our eyes. Inattentional blindness is a standard problem that comes with human brains. Remember the gorilla experiment cited earlier in this chapter? Gretchen is so focused on the spaceship that she fails to notice another flock of birds close by that fly by right in front of her field of vision. If she had noticed them, she likely would have realized what it was she was seeing in the distance. Notice that Gretchen also makes the mistake of thinking that her being unable to identify the object is somehow a good reason to conclude it must be an alien spaceship. A good skeptic would have opted for, "I don't know." Gretchen continued to watch the object for another few minutes, but as the sun set behind her, the UFO vanished. Stunned by what she had just experienced, she took a deep breath. "Whoa! I just saw a UFO, a spaceship from outer space." Her hands trembled, but she wasn't scared anymore. Now she was excited. "This is fantastic," she thought. "Now I know for sure aliens are real. We are not alone." Gretchen took off for home, running as fast as she could. Smart and honest people are sincerely wrong all the time. Most people who claim to have had a paranormal or supernatural experience are probably not lying or suffering from a serious mental illness that might have caused them to experience what they did. Most likely, they really did see or experience something, but that something is probably an internal brain experience of one kind or another that normal people can and do have when their brains misinterpret real events or confuse fantasy for reality. For this reason, it is not only the claims of others that we need to be skeptical of. We also must be skeptical of our own thoughts and perceptions. When she arrived at home, Gretchen told her family about the UFO. The next day, she told everybody at school about it. Because of Gretchen's reputation for being smart and honest, everyone was inclined to believe her. "Wow," said her teacher, Mrs. Flurston, "I guess this means aliens are real. How exciting. Hey, students, what do you say we do a special lesson on UFOs this week?" "Yay!" yelled the students. Mrs. Flurston then told the class that she would bring in a few excellent and educational pseudo-History Channel DVDs she had at home. She said one shows how Hitler had used alien spaceships to nearly win World War II. The kids cheered again, even louder this time. "Another one of the DVDs explains how aliens visited us thousands of years ago and left a few pets behind by mistake," said Mrs. Flurston. "Those pets, it turns out, were our distant ancestors." This time the students all stood up and clapped wildly. Little Kevin Handfert, the cute class clown with a weak bladder, raised his hand enthusiastically and blurted out that he could bring in his daddy's science books about the UFO crash at Roswell. "It's even got real pictures of the alien bodies," he said. Mrs. Flurston nodded approvingly. The boys in the front row high-fived each other. Some of the kids punched the sky in celebration. Even Todd McSfinster, the grumpiest kid in class, got in the spirit. "Finally," he said, "we get to learn some real science. It's about time." One classroom couldn't contain this much energy for long. By the end of the week, the whole school was buzzing about Gretchen's UFO, and soon after that, the whole town was. When Gretchen got home from school one day, she was greeted in the living room by a reporter from the local newspaper who had been waiting to interview her. The very next day, an article about her was on the front page of the town paper. It included a sketch of the spaceship, based on Gretchen's description. The illustration included several details that Gretchen didn't actually say that she saw, but the artist thought it would make it more interesting for people, so he added them. She never saw any strange markings on the side, missile things attached to it, or an alien waving from a window like the newspaper sketch showed, but the general shape of the object was about right, so Gretchen didn't say anything. The last sentence of the article read as follows. The town of Rotbridge can only applaud Gretchen Greengum's extraordinary courage for sharing this story of her close encounter. While there are many questions still left to be answered, we now know, thanks to this one special little girl, that we are not alone in the universe. Even better than the article, Rotbridge's mayor, the Honorable Earl Wayne Chipley, publicly and officially praised Gretchen at a special town hall ceremony. He even presented her with a fancy plaque suitable for hanging. During the event, the mayor called her a hero. He also said that he too was a believer and encouraged everyone to keep watching the skies because they are definitely up there. Reputation and titles aren't everything. When it comes to extraordinary claims, a person's credentials and reputation matter, but only so far. These things aren't nearly as important as good evidence. Always remind yourself that the person making an unusual claim, no matter how impressive his or her accomplishments or reputation for honesty may be, is human and therefore is capable of mixing up fantasy and reality just like anyone else. Also, be on guard about placing too much trust in the news media. Journalists are human too, and that means beliefs, biases, and weak skepticism can and do creep into their work. We also must be careful about the natural human tendency to look up to, follow, and believe authority figures. Just because people may be in positions of power and trust, such as a mayor or an educator, doesn't mean they can't fall for bogus beliefs just like anyone else. Time flies for heroes. 15 years after seeing the UFO, Gretchen was still smart and still cute, but she was not quite as popular as she used to be. Things were never the same for her after that day. She became convinced that the spaceship would come back, so she spent more and more of her time looking up and waiting. Over the years, the townspeople, then her friends, and finally her own family grew bored with the story. They still liked her well enough, and most people thought Gretchen meant well, but after years of UFO hunting with nothing to show for it, and all the constant talking about aliens, the whole thing grew stale and a bit embarrassing. There was just something about a young woman in the prime of her life, with so much potential, constantly staring up at the sky and doing nothing else that some people didn't feel comfortable with. But she didn't care. Day after day, night after night, Gretchen stood with her head facing up, scanning the sky, looking for that UFO. "Look down once in a while," her father screamed at her one day. "For Pete's sake, you're wasting your life staring at clouds all day." But Gretchen kept looking up and hoping the aliens would return. Sadly, all that looking up made her lose sight of her dreams down here on Earth. Gretchen never did go to college, never took over as boss at the kitty litter recycling factory. As soon as she graduated from high school, she devoted herself full-time to alienology. She devoured every book, magazine, and website she could find that promoted belief in UFOs and aliens. She read about alien abductions, the famous crash at Roswell, secret activities at Area 51, and people who were in communication with aliens. She attended lectures by people who said they had been aboard UFOs and taken trips in space. She partied with Raelians one wild weekend in Vegas. She played her Close Encounters of the Third Kind DVD so many times that one day her DVD player just up and died. Gretchen's greatest moment of glory probably came when she appeared for 27 seconds in a primetime pseudo-history channel documentary titled Nostradamus, Human Savant or Alien Astrologer. She told them her UFO story on camera, but it didn't make the final cut. They only used her comments about aliens probably having the ability to predict the future, and her statement that, therefore, there's a good chance that Nostradamus was one of them, or at least consulted with them. Gretchen had no interest in reading books that were skeptical of UFO claims, and refused to listen to the perspectives of professional astronomers, search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI researchers, astrobiologists, and National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, officials on this subject. She felt she knew better than all of them. After all, she had seen a spaceship with her own eyes, not them. To her, it made no sense to waste time considering possible alternate explanations, so she devoted herself to researching stories and mining data only from those who believed. Her older brother was skeptical and often tried to argue with her about UFOs, but she wouldn't have it. "He didn't see, so he doesn't know," she said to herself. "Besides, it's not like he can disprove my story." Confirmation bias can prevent us from thinking clearly about our beliefs. we all tend to pay attention to and remember information that supports our beliefs while shying away from and forgetting information that challenges or contradicts them. Everyone does this, which is another reason why being a good skeptic is so important in everyday life. If you care about truth and reality, if you don't want to waste your time believing nonsense, then you must be aware of confirmation bias and resist it. You have to work at keeping an open mind and considering other ideas and evidence, no matter how foreign or uncomfortable they may feel. It's also not the skeptic's job to disprove extraordinary claims. It's the responsibility of the person who makes the claim to prove it. That big UFO day was a long, long time ago. Gretchen's gone gray now. She is winding down a life that certainly no one would have predicted for her half a century ago. She never did leave Rutbridge. Never did take a stab at string theory, despite all that potential. She never competed in another baton-twirling event after fifth grade. To this day, she still walks around town with her face angled upward. When she talks to people on the street, she rarely makes eye contact, too busy looking up. It wasn't only her social life and career that suffered. Gretchen paid a physical price as well. Today her legs are gnarly sticks of scarred flesh. All that staring up at the sky doesn't make for safe walking down on the ground. Over the years, she's slammed into so many fire hydrants and park benches and collided with so many skateboarders that it's a wonder she's still alive. If you didn't know better, after one look at those mangled and dented shins, you might assume she's a retired Muay Thai fighter who had spent a long career battling in Bangkok. Yeah, that day Gretchen saw her UFO changed everything about her. Gretchen spends most of her time these days alone, in a small apartment, writing and posting her UFO newsletter on the web. She'll play that DVD of her 27-second pseudo-history channel soundbite for anyone willing to watch. A couple of times a year, she gives a lecture on UFO science at the Rutbridge Public Library. Pretty much the same small audience shows up every time. There are the diehard believers, the homeless people, and a few who get lost looking for the romance novel section. But Gretchen never fails to deliver. When it's showtime, she glows with enthusiasm. "I know intelligent extraterrestrials are visiting us," she says. "I saw them with my own eyes. They are here." Her unblinking stare is creepy to some, but others seem inspired to believe. "I can remember that day so clearly, and all those years ago," she says. "The spaceship hovered right above my head. It was silver with flashing lights. It had strange markings on the hull. There were missiles or some kind of auxiliary rockets on the sides, too. I could even see a window, and I could see an alien with a large head inside. He was very pale, either gray or white. I'll never forget his eyes, large black eyes. And then he waved at me. Yes, it was a moment I'll never forget." Science has shown that our memories are unreliable. Our brains do not provide accurate replays of past events for us to watch. They construct our memories from bits of information. When doing this, our brains edit and embellish. Things are left out, things are added in. Sometimes other memories are mixed in. Sometimes things we saw in a movie, watched on TV, or read in a book are added to the mix. And all of this can happen in a way that feels right to us. Memories of things that never happened can feel 100% accurate. This is why confidence, honesty, intelligence, and reputation have little to do with whether or not a person is remembering something accurately. Trust people, but don't trust their memories. Gretchen checked out at the age of 87. Right up to her death, she clung to her belief that she saw a spaceship long ago. It never occurred to her that she could have reacted to that event differently. She never imagined that her UFO was nothing more than a flock of birds, the setting sun, and her own brain conspiring to fool her. She had never heard of confirmation bias or inattentional bias. She never learned that memories are fallible fabrications of the brain. No one ever advised her that it is better to live with an unanswered question than to pretend to know something you don't. No one had ever suggested to that bright little girl that it was important for her to think before she believed. The loss goes two ways. It wasn't only Gretchen who paid a price for not being skeptical enough. Everyone else lost, too. Gretchen's family lost the joy and reward of watching a daughter strive for big things. The town was robbed of one of its brightest lights. In real life, it works this way, too. Our entire world is diminished when minds filled with potential are sacrificed on the many altars of irrational belief. Sadly, it happens every minute of every day. Millions of people who are much like the fictional Gretchen have their wonderful and powerful brains smothered and dimmed as their skulls are packed with the cheap sawdust of unproven and unlikely claims. Given the many very serious problems humankind currently faces and will face, I'm not sure that we can afford to keep losing so much intellectual wealth each generation. It seems to me that we need all the brain power we can muster, including yours. Your bizarre and biased brain. The following is a list of some natural mental biases and common thinking errors that can lead any one of us to accept wrong or dubious claims and beliefs. To become a good skeptic, you don't need to earn a degree in psychology, but you should have some level of awareness about how your own thinking can trick you. You can never be immune, but the more you know, the safer you will be from self-deception. It can also help you to understand how others may have gone wrong in their thinking when they are trying to convince you of something they believe. Billions of smart, sane, and sincere people fall for nonsense every day because of these weird thought processes. It may startle some to realize it, but a very small portion of our brain's activity is what you might describe as conscious, or things we are aware of. Probably more than 90% of what is going on in our brains every day is subconscious, meaning we are mostly clueless about it. Think of it like this. Our brain is like a house that has 20 rooms on 4 floors. But we are allowed to enter only one room in the entire house. The doors to the other 19 rooms are locked. The house is always busy. A lot of activity is going on in those other 19 rooms, and it all directly impacts us. But we don't get to peek in. Basic brain awareness information should be taught to everyone and taught early. Sadly, however, the vast majority of the world's people go their entire lives without ever learning about it. This is one of the reasons why so many brains end up in all the wrong places. But not yours, right? Anchoring. This bias leads us to rely so much on one past experience or one piece of information that we ignore or reject new, more, and better information that contradicts it. Don't drop anchor in the muck of a past error when you could set sail for more sensible lands. Argument from authority. We are social creatures who devote a lot of our time to thinking about social ranking. A byproduct of this obsession is a tendency to blindly trust the claims and ideas of people who rank above us. Whether or not we realize it, perceptions of authority and superiority impress us and influence us whether they are valid or not. A good skeptic knows to assess the merits of a claim independent of who presents it. Just remember that truth can come from below us, and lies can come from above us. Pay less attention to the messenger, and more attention to the message. Argument from ignorance. When you don't know, you don't know. Too often many people think that the absence of a normal, sensible answer must therefore mean that the answer is something special, magical, or supernatural. No, unknown means unknown. When weak skeptics say, "You can't explain exactly how it happened, so it must be a miracle," a fair reply is, "You can't explain exactly how the miracle happened, so it must be a natural event." Availability cascade. When you say something repeatedly, you are likely to believe it with increasing confidence, even if it's not true. It turns out that we actually listen to ourselves when we speak and trust what we hear. So be careful about what you go around saying. Make sure it's valid because your brain is always listening. Availability heuristic. This is a big one. We tend to be influenced far more by one or two real-life examples in our head than we are by more abstract facts and statistics. So if you were to show a person a few studies done by credible researchers that showed ear candling failed to deliver health benefits, a weak skeptic might not be impressed because she's too busy thinking about a family member who swears ear candling cleared his sinuses and fixed his vertigo problem. Backfire effect. I observe this one in action all the time, and it drives me nuts. It turns out that there is a natural bias that can make us believe something with greater confidence when we are confronted with evidence or strong arguments that oppose it. Because of this bias toward digging in your heels, more and stronger evidence often results in strengthened irrational belief. Be aware of it and resist it, or you may end up defending nonsense. Base rate fallacy. This one derails us with ease. We can readily find ourselves focusing on one tiny speck of information, a single story, for example, or on bad data that supports a claim while simultaneously ignoring more credible information, or a larger body of data that goes against it. Bias blind spot. This bias can trip anyone, of course, but I always stress to skeptics that they pay particular attention to it. We can more easily see biases and illogical reasoning in others than we can in ourselves. It seems natural to think you are less likely to be fooled than everyone else around you is. That is the kind of arrogance that will lead you straight into the spider's web. Confabulation. This is the scary weakness we all have for remembering things incorrectly, yet feeling like the memory is totally accurate. As I've described earlier, it's very easy for the brain to jumble the timeline of events or combine different events to create one believable memory. Good skeptics have to keep this one in mind because very intelligent, confident, respectable, and sincere people can be completely wrong when they describe something that they experienced in the past. Confirmation bias. As explained previously, this wicked mental filtering process will have you noticing, emphasizing, and remembering information and experiences that support your beliefs while ignoring and tossing out data that contradict your beliefs. Make the effort to pay attention to this tendency and always consider evidence and arguments that go against the grain of your brain. A good skeptic keeps an open mind. Conformity, also known as the bandwagon effect. You probably think you are an individual who thinks independently and doesn't care too much about what everybody else thinks or does. The truth is, however, we all feel the lure and often succumb to social pressures when it comes to how we eat, dress, talk, buy things, entertain ourselves, and think. A good skeptic remembers this when doing an inventory of his or her beliefs and conclusions. Did I really think this through, or am I just following the herd? Nothing to be ashamed of here. We all want and need the herd to some degree. Just don't allow yourself to be blinded by this powerful and constant pull on your brain. Emotional bias. This one is so simple but can cause many problems. Our emotions can easily dominate our attention to the point where we don't see or consider relevant information right in front of our faces. Emotions are great, the spice of life, but don't let them rule your decision-making process. Don't just feel, think. False consensus effect. This is the tendency we have to overestimate how many people agree with us about the things we believe. This can cause people to have more confidence in their beliefs. If everyone believes in ghosts, then they must be real. False memory. This is a common problem in which imagination is mistaken for the memory of something that actually happened. This one has obvious implications for everything from angel sightings and near-death experiences to alien abductions. Forer effect, also known as the Barnum effect. This bias helps explain the popularity of things like psychic readings and astrology. When given a general personality description, for example, many people naturally think it describes them in a unique and special way, even though it is vague and could apply to many people or even to all people. Framing effect. This bias scares me as an author. We can be swayed to judge information and ideas based on who delivers them to us and how they are presented. So if you don't like me, you may not be inclined to accept my message that skepticism is good for you. I hope you like me, but even if you do like me, don't let that be the reason you embrace skeptical thinking. Do it because you thought it through and it makes sense. Hallucinations. It is well established that human beings are capable of seeing things that aren't there. What is really weird is that hallucinations can occur in the same parts of the brain that see and hear real things, so hallucinations can feel totally authentic. The obvious question is, why do so many people who go on and on about paranormal, supernatural sightings fail to consider hallucinations first? If someone says it was too real to be a hallucination, she or he has done nothing more than reveal that she or he doesn't understand hallucinations. Hindsight bias. Never underestimate how effective our brains can be at keeping us feeling good about ourselves. This bias is the routine lie we tell ourselves and then believe when we learn that we were dead wrong about something. "I knew it all along" is an ego-soothing natural reaction, but you probably already knew that, right? Illusion of truth effect. When we hear a claim that is familiar to us, we are more likely to believe it than we would if we had never heard it before. This means simply being exposed to statements about X makes you prone to trust and believe in X further down the line when told about it. It can work with ESP and conspiracy theories the same way it works with car commercials and laundry detergent ads. Illusory correlation. This is very common. Remember how we love to connect those dots? Well, our brains are so eager to do this that many of us often connect two or more unrelated events and then wrongly conclude that one caused the others or that they are somehow linked in a meaningful way when they are not. Inattentional blindness. We are capable of staring at something, thinking that we are paying very close attention to the scene but still missing important or unusual things that are there right in front of our eyes. Remember the gorilla that pounded its chest in the middle of a basketball game? In-group bias. Everybody knows about this one, but how many make an effort to recognize and resist it when confronted with an extraordinary claim? We tend to respect, admire, and listen to people who are in our groups. Nations, religions, schools, clubs, etc. This can lead us to trust them about a belief or claim over someone who is outside the group, even if the outsider makes more sense. Irrational escalation. This one can be uncomfortable to deal with, but fight it if the situation demands. This bias can leave us feeling too invested in a decision or a belief to let go and reverse course, even when logic and evidence make it clear that we should. Please don't spend years or an entire lifetime saddled with a bad belief. If you figure out that it's wrong, cut your losses and move on. Observational selection bias. I notice this one going on in my own head all the time. Whenever I buy a new laptop, MP3 player, or some other gadget, I suddenly see that specific model everywhere. Of course, it's because I have a heightened awareness of it because I just purchased one. This selective perception can fool us into thinking special or weird things are happening when they aren't. Oh my gosh, so many people at school today are wearing a crucifix necklace just like mine. It must be a sign. Pareidolia. This one helps to explain many claims people make about seeing strange things. When we see or hear something that is nothing meaningful, our brains might decide to go ahead and give it meaning anyway. Our brains can create a recognizable picture in a cloud or on a slice of toast. We can also hear words in meaningless noise where none exist. Priming. Never underestimate how easy it is to manipulate a human being. For example, just by hearing or reading a word, you are likely to think of it and to be influenced by it later in unrelated thoughts and activities, even if you forget all about originally hearing or reading that word. Status quo bias. We are creatures of habit. I don't know about you, but I haven't changed my hairstyle since first grade. A general reluctance to change can derail us when we try to sort out truth from fiction. If we have a few bad beliefs in our heads, we may hold on to them for no other reason than we like familiarity and don't like change. Got all those memorized? I hope you remember them because there will be a test. It's called the rest of your life. No, you don't need to memorize them, but it helps to familiarize yourself with them, and you should at least be vaguely aware of what your subconscious brain is up to every day. Except that we need these strange biases and weird mental processes. If not for the kooky minefield of tricks, shortcuts, and deceptions inside our heads, we would not function as well as we do in our daily lives. It's an interesting twist. If our brains were not so nutty, we'd all go nuts. In most cases, the mysterious workings of the brain are necessary for efficient thinking and living. So don't hate your brain for its deceptive ways in setting you up to make mistakes in reasoning and perception. Thank it for doing the best it can to get you through one more day safely. Just be sure to understand that you can never trust it completely when trying to separate truth from fiction. Arm yourselves in the war against reality. Now that we know something about why it's important to be skeptical and we looked at some of the ways our brains can trick us into believing unlikely things, let's turn our attention to some specific challenges in the next chapter. It helps if a good skeptic is familiar with key problems associated with some of the more popular beliefs out there. For example, you would be right to ask, where's the evidence? If someone tried to convince you that the lost continent of Atlantis was real and was inhabited by an advanced race of superhumans or extraterrestrials. But it would be much better if you had enough background information to be able to ask the Atlantis believer a few good questions that both expose the weakness of the claim and encourage the believer to think more deeply about it. Sure, it's correct that no one has proved the story of an alien spaceship crashing near Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, but it's much better if you can share the real story of what happened there. When someone attempts to get you to buy into the latest magical end-of-the-world prediction, you can deflate his sales pitch faster and more effectively if you know something about the long history of these baseless beliefs. The next chapter is going to be a wild ride around, over and through tall tales and wild claims, so strap on your helmet and brace yourself. We're going in. Good thinking. Don't forget this about your memory. You can't trust it. Human memory is a fragile and fallible thing. Our memories are constructed in our head like stories based on bits of information. They are not reliable playbacks of recordings. Your brain constructs and interprets what you look at. You don't have a camera in your head that faithfully captures reality. What we see is something the brain has produced for us, based loosely on what comes in through our eyes. It's never 100% true and complete. For this reason, we can't always be sure about what we think we see. Learn about some of the many cognitive biases that come with every human brain. If you are not careful, these weird thinking processes will trip you up, leading you to make errors in reasoning and embrace bad beliefs. Chapter 3. A Thinker's Guide to Unusual Claims and Weird Beliefs. Now that we have an idea of just how weird and troublesome our own brains can be when it comes to sorting out truth from fiction, Let's consider some specific claims that are unproven and unlikely to be true, even though millions of people confidently claim that they are. As we explore these claims and expose them to the light of skepticism, please keep in mind that in most cases, a good skeptic does not claim to know that an unusual claim is not real or true. A very important part of being a good skeptic is maintaining an open mind. It goes both ways. Just as believers shouldn't pretend to know things that they actually don't, skeptics ought to avoid following this kind of thinking too. For example, based on the absence of good evidence and the improbability of a large creature eluding scientific confirmation in a confined space for so many years, I'm very confident the Loch Ness Monster doesn't exist. But I stop just short of declaring that it's impossible. After all, stranger things than that have happened. Microscopic mites, germs, and walking on the moon once seemed pretty crazy, too. The Loch Ness Monster claim doesn't necessarily contradict the known laws of nature, and I'm not emotionally invested in a world with no Loch Ness Monster. I wouldn't shed one tear or feel awkward for one second if Nessie were netted tomorrow. In fact, I would be thrilled to hear the news. Sure, it would mean that I had been leaning the wrong way on this one, but so what? I don't care if I was wrong yesterday. I want to be right today. The discovery of a modern-day plesiosaur would be wonderful, something to celebrate. In fact, I would probably be on my way to Scotland within hours of the announcement so that I could try to interview the discoverers. A good skeptic does not stubbornly defend a rigid position against a claim at all costs. A good skeptic only wants to base her or his conclusions on the best available evidence and arguments. If truth and reality were to translate to a world with ghosts, magic crystals, and vampires in it, then that is the world good skeptics want to know about. Skeptics are often accused of being against everything, when in reality we are against nothing except mistakes, delusions, and lies. Why should anyone disagree with this position? Furthermore, shouldn't we all be against mistakes, delusions, and lies? Too many good skeptics fall short when talking with believers about their beliefs. It is not enough to simply demand evidence and poke a few holes in a claim. Experience has taught me that a good skeptic who wants to be helpful and make a lasting impression on others needs to bring something more to the party. Relevant ideas, a bit of historical context, some science, some insight into how the brain works, and maybe a good alternate explanation can go much further than ranting about the absence of evidence and leaving it at that. If being constructive and getting people to think more seriously about their beliefs is the goal, then arm yourself with the following skeptical summaries of popular beliefs. If they make sense to you, please share them with anyone and everyone willing to listen. If you happen to believe in some or all of the following claims, I hope you will keep an open mind as you listen and give my words fair consideration. No less important, I hope you receive them in the spirit they are offered. I am not trying to convince you of the truth according to Guy. I'm attempting to help you think for yourself in more effective ways and then draw your own conclusions. So keep listening and keep thinking. Magical, supernatural, paranormal. One of the most consistent things about people everywhere is belief in unusual things that probably are not real or true. It may not be universal, but it's close. It's as if we just can't help ourselves. One can claim just about anything, and somebody, somewhere, will be willing to believe it. Over the last several thousand years, no matter where we were or what we were up to, you can be sure there was some heavy-duty believing going on. If you were to board a time machine, spin the dial, and land in any random society of the past, you can be certain that you would find many people who believe in things beyond the normal and natural world that we all see before us. The objects of our belief may vary tremendously, but this common susceptibility, urge, or need to believe raises fascinating and important questions. Do we really live in a universe that is overflowing with ghosts, gods, and magical phenomena, as billions of believers declare every day? Or could there be a simpler explanation for most or all of these confident claims that people keep making generation after generation? Are believers describing the real universe or misinterpreting it? One thing is certain, our condition as a believing species remains strong even in the age of science. According to a Gallup poll, 75% of American adults say they believe in at least one of the common supernatural paranormal beliefs, such as ghosts, Atlantis, ESP, psychics, alien abductions, astrology, and so on. Are they reacting to reality or misreading it? Do we have a fundamental need to believe these extraordinary things, or is this just something we do out of tradition and habit? If for 100 years no adults taught children, or influenced them, by example, to believe in magic, paranormal, supernatural claims, would these things vanish or would they pop up independently, created anew, over and over again? Finally, is it rude to ask these questions, to challenge unusual beliefs? I hope not, because I've been asking them all my life, and the last thing I want to be is rude or mean to people. I'm only curious, and I want to know as much as I can about my world and my universe. I don't want to derail or distract from this by spending my time believing in and fashioning my life around things that aren't real. What's wrong with that? I would think that most people don't want to believe in things that aren't true. Most people who hold extraordinary beliefs think they are accurate and would want to know if they are not, right? The intentions of skeptics are often misunderstood. So to be clear, I am not attacking or disparaging anyone when I promote science and encourage skepticism. I'm doing nothing more than suggesting to people that they think more critically for their own good. Nobody really wants to waste their time, their money, possibly their life on a bogus belief, right? If so, then I'm here to help. We're all on the same side. It is also important for people to recognize that skepticism is not even necessarily anti-magic, anti-UFO, anti-ESP, and so on. If unusual claims about magic, alien visits, or miracles are valid, then science and skepticism are not the enemy of those claims. In fact, they are just the opposite. They would be the ways through which to prove that extraordinary and unusual claims are valid. If we want to know what is real and what is not, if we want to do our best to avoid squandering time and resources on things that are almost certainly not true, then we must make an effort to question everything and do our best to separate truth from fiction. We can't just take someone's word for it, that a spaceship crashed at Roswell in 1947, or that the Bermuda Triangle is a paranormal zone of death that swallows up ships and planes because a best-selling book or television show says so. We need to test and verify. Fortunately, we have science, which does this very well. Don't hesitate to utilize the scientific process when you bump up against weird things in everyday life. It includes the following steps. Ask questions. This is critical. Don't passively accept what you are told. It's stunning how many people fail to simply ask questions when confronted by an unusual claim. Nothing more than a couple of key questions can derail most invalid claims. Observe. Look and listen with deliberate effort. When someone says prayer heals any and all illnesses, for example, observe the world. If you see people get sick and die every day, even though they pray, then maybe there is a problem with this claim. Research. If you look for it, it's not difficult to find credible information about most claims. Do your own fact-checking. If someone tries to sell you magnetic underwear that cures constipation and adds that it's been written up in scientific journals, check to see that it has. Experiment. Can you think of an experiment to test a particular claim before accepting it? Has anyone else conducted an experiment to test it? If not, why not? If astrology is tempting you, for example, have a friend give you random horoscopes of various signs every day for a month. Log how accurate the horoscope is each day. At the end of the month, see if the horoscopes based on your real sign were accurate more often than the others. Share ideas and conclusions with others. This is a great way to get feedback from people who may know more than you about a given claim. The more good information, the better. Remember, the goal is not to debunk or discredit. The goal is to get to the truth, whatever it may be. The scientific process is not perfect, but nothing else comes close. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, or where you are. Age, gender, income, educational achievements, nationality, hair color, and shoe size are all irrelevant. The scientific process just works. If you want to be better than most at spotting nonsense and dodging delusions, then step number one is to think like a scientist and become a good skeptic. Go on the offensive when someone tries to sell you a bizarre belief. This does not mean that you must reflexively jump into angry opposition of any claim that hints of magical, supernatural, or paranormal belief. Being a skeptic is not like joining a club or political party and vowing to forever uphold a list of agreed-upon beliefs and non-beliefs. Good skeptics change their minds, according to the best evidence available. There is just one thing to be loyal to here, reality. Some people argue that there must be something going on because every known society, without exception, has had high levels of belief in various things that can be described as supernatural or paranormal. How could so many people today and throughout history be so wrong about so much? With all this smoke, there must be a few fires somewhere, right? Maybe? But a good skeptic needs to see some actual flames. The smoke of belief is not enough. Who cares if a lot of people believe? We need something more than a majority vote before accepting an extraordinary claim. Popularity has never been a reliable measure of truth and reality. Look back on our shared past. How many times have most of the people been dead wrong about something important in a given society? Consider religion. From at least the earliest beginnings of civilization to the present, millions of unique and contradictory gods have come and gone. Based on their biographies alone, they cannot possibly all exist. Logic and basic math make it clear that, at the minimum, most people have been wrong about their gods for most of history. This simple observation alone shows that we are prone to creating the magical and the supernatural out of thin air and then believing in it with total conviction. Believing or not believing in something doesn't make it true. There were times in our past when probably 100% of the people on Earth would have dismissed the idea of continental drift if it had been presented to them. Entire continents float and move around the Earth on a sea of melted rock? You must be nuts, but our belief in immovable continents never stopped them from moving not one inch and not for one second. Reality, as we have seen over and over, operates independently of our beliefs. This alone